When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
But I remember like walking by and they had a garbage bag. And I was like, what is that? And my friends were like, oh my God, those are condoms.
I
was like,
I guess they're being made.
This is On the Fence with Monica Oksanen.
Welcome back to On the Fence. I'm your host, Monica Oksanen. It has been quite some time since we had an episode, and that was due to the Olympics and other personal reasons. However, we are back. And for tonight's episode, I'd like to welcome Georgia Ellenwood, who is a Canadian 2028 Tokyo Olympic hemp athlete. She is an 8-time NCAA All-American and a 2018 Big Ten Athlete of the Year for the Wisconsin Badgers.
Welcome to the show, Georgia. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm just packing up all my stuff, ready to go back home to BC. So it's my off season right now. So I get to live a normal life for about 2 months.
Yeah, that's always the interesting thing about being an athlete. Of we go into like obviously work mode nonstop, always training. And then we have off season. It's kind of like, okay, what do I really do with myself now?
I know you dedicate so much of your life, especially this run, because I think it was instead of 4 years leading up to the Olympics, it was 5. And so you are in like training mode, getting the cycles right, everything all up until that point. And then after, it's kind of like you're just let onto the world, like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to just do normal stuff for 2 months. So I'm struggling a little bit with not working out. Like I have the urge to work out every day. And like, I can eat things that I didn't before. And I'm like, I need to allow myself the freedom, because sometimes you're so regimented in that athlete mindset that it's hard to let loose every once in a while.
Yeah, I totally understand. And then also like you want to work out, and I don't know about you, I'm personally a workaholic. So like if I don't work out, I feel lazy, but at the same time, we can't be working out because we need to let our bodies rest.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing. It's like, you have to understand the balance, and that's not very easy to understand for someone who has gotten to the point that we've both gotten. And obviously it shows hard work. It takes hard work to get there. And so I think maybe I need to put my energy into something else. So if you have any suggestions, maybe I should like do rock climbing or maybe like cycling or something, just something to switch it up. Because if you're too much into your own sport, I feel like sometimes you can lose the passion for it a little bit. You need to miss it a little bit.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I mean, I would say cycling. Everyone said that's a good one. It's not high impact on your joints, and you could be outdoors. And I mean, you guys have beautiful outdoors over there versus, I mean, New York is not as pretty to look at. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a good one. I don't really know. I feel like rock climbing isn't tough on your joints.
No, I think it's fine. It works different muscles too. So maybe I'll even try fencing. Who knows?
There you go.
So bad at it.
Nobody's good at it when they start, but it also not great on your joints. So yeah, maybe not the best option. We'll save that for when I come visit you.
Yeah, there you go. I'll rule that one out for now.
Yeah. So it's funny. We always start off with how I met my guests, but ours is interesting. So let's just go with we met through social media.
Sounds great. That sounds like the normal route there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you really look at it, that is essentially how we met.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I wouldn't have actually met you without social media.
Yeah.
So I think it was a way for us to find each other. And then luckily we did click and now we're friends. So it's like, I think we'll chalk it up to social media because now we're both independently friends, apart from how we actually met.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was actually thinking about that one. I was laughing because I was like, it's literally the most weirdest way that I've become friends with somebody.
I was like, how is she going to navigate this one? You have to say it at some point.
Yeah. So social media, we hung out, went to a comedy show, a very interesting comedy show, very sexual, and then ended up with somebody talking about killing themselves.
Yeah, I think it was a roller coaster. It was entertaining to go to the comedy show. It was just kind of funny with, I think people were trying new things and we just happened to be a part of it. So I think some of our laughs were just to make them feel a little bit better, but some of them were genuine as well.
Yeah. Some of them were, I was losing at certain points, and especially when the guy or the girl, I don't remember. And he was like, yeah, you look like you dabble in cocaine. Like, oh,
we're both dead silent. Like, what a weird thing
to say to a complete stranger.
We're just weird, okay?
We're just athletes, and that's what you feel from us, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Offensive.
Oh man. All right. So let's dive into the premise of this. Is basically talking about Tokyo. I mean, all Olympics, from my conversations with everybody, are very different. I mean, there does seem to be some kind of like thing that happens during the Olympics, which makes it a little more interesting always. Like, we had Zika in Rio. I don't remember what there was during London, but these Olympics were definitely completely different. So how was your journey impacted with COVID and all of different stuff? And like, what setbacks did you really deal with?
Mm-hmm. Well, this Olympics was obviously very different. Even though I hadn't been to a previous Olympics, I already knew going in that it might look a little different than any of the other Olympics. But it was very locked down. Like, I thought we would have a little bit of freedom, at least to like explore or talk to people from other countries. And so we did a training camp beforehand in a place called Gifu, and we weren't allowed to leave our rooms. We got escorted everywhere. We were only allowed to eat and train. And so everyone back home was thinking that I'm at the Olympics, I'm having this crazy time. Like, obviously I'm very grateful to be at the Olympics and there is a job to do. Like, my main focus is to compete, but you want to take in the Olympic experience. And I think this one was very different in that you do all this training, you're so set on going to the Olympics, and you want to have a little bit of fun because you're like, this is the biggest stage. If I get too in my head, if I'm too focused on competition, then it could go wrong because you're too focused on it. You need a little bit of balance. And so I think it was hard sometimes for a lot of the athletes to find that outlet while we were there. We felt very trapped in our rooms. We felt like trying to get out of thinking about our competitions because there's so much pressure on us. And so I think that was the main challenge when we were there, is like trying to find a way to get out of your head a little bit. And when you're at your home, in the comfort of your own home, you can do the things you like. If you like gaming, or if you like binging Netflix or whatever, that wasn't as easily accessible. Like, the Olympics are on every TV at dining halls and in your rooms and everything. So I think trying to step out of that mind frame for a second was really hard in that environment. But maybe it worked for some people, but for me, I definitely was happy to come back and find a little bit of like therapy and something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good point I didn't really think of. But I mean, yeah, I'm trying to like remember of what I was doing. Yeah, I was definitely trying to stay busy and, I mean, to the best of my ability, obviously, before I competed. But what you're saying of, yeah, you want to take in the experience. I mean, it is literally a celebration of all of the hard work that you've done, and not just like 4 years or 5 years in situation, but like years. It's not like you started training 5 years ago for these Olympics, but you were training your entire life and you made it. This was your goal. You made it. So like, while you are here to work, you're also here to like acknowledge that achievement and celebrate it. But yeah, no, definitely. Like I said, I didn't think of the fact of obviously everybody sitting in their rooms and not being able to just like not think about the Olympics. Like, that's so much free time. Though in a way, I spoke in a previous episode about it, is I think, well, obviously it was not fun for the athletes, but watching it as an Olympian, maybe as other people kind of realize this, I think this was like the most like genuine and like human that we have ever seen the Olympians. I think we even maybe talked about this when we saw each other, but like, you didn't have your support system there. You didn't have time to like step away and like, you know, like not deal with this. Like, you had to deal with all of your emotions. And like, for me, at least for the first time ever, like, it didn't seem like we're all robots. That's what everybody always seems to think, that we're just robots. We're out there competing, whatever. This is our job. Like, we're not emotional, but you saw everybody's emotions, like so much more when they won, when they lost. So, I mean, I'm getting chills thinking about it because, again, that's never been the case. Like, we've just had our support systems and everything. And for the first time ever, everybody was just a human being.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like a product of going through so many more additional struggles to get there, or if it's because there were no spectators, so you don't feel as many eyes on you, so you feel more comfortable to release your emotions. So I'm not sure which, maybe it's both combined. Like, yeah, when we just are finally at the Olympics and we're like, wow, this really happened. We like didn't think it was going to happen. It seems so uncertain. So I think people have been building up all this emotion to get to that point. And then finally they achieve what they've been wanting to achieve and they can't control what they're feeling anymore. And there's no one there to like, kind of limit them on how they're feeling either. Like they feel they're within this group of other people who just did the same thing as them. So I think they feel comfortable to show that. But I agree with you. I think that everyone there was a little bit more comfortable with their emotions on their sleeve. And it was really cool to see as well. And it felt more comfortable for me to be myself while I was competing. So a really cool atmosphere for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, that was a really interesting thing to see. Obviously, like I said, I mean, it sucks because I know how much pressure it is and how that feels. And like when even like we won a medal, which was like winning, I mean, I was able to like hug my two best friends that were there. My family couldn't come, but like, I couldn't imagine how shitty that would feel not having that, or even worse, not meddling and not being able to just like hug somebody. Like teammates are teammates, but like at the same time, like we really are only friends to a certain degree because we're all competing against each other. So maybe you have somebody like, for us, we have different weapons. So like we're not direct competition.
Yeah.
But like in your direct weapon, I mean, again, we all compete against each other. So it's none of us are just best friends because that's physically impossible. We're also rivals.
I can't imagine what it would be like for someone like, we're both like older athletes now. And they're in some other sports like gymnastics, and they compete at such a young age, and not having to be able to have your parents there would be like so impactful. You have to grow up really quick. And I'm obviously like, we're both experienced and we've done many competitions on our own. But I mean, I went through something that I hadn't gone through before. Like I was like physically ill on the second day and I was struggling to get through the competition. And I remember being in the medical tent after like them trying to help me recover from whatever I was going through. And I was like, wow. And I didn't have my phone or anything because they take it from you. And all I wanted was just my mom to be there. I was like, yeah. My mom doesn't even know what I was going through. She's like probably stressing out in Canada on the other side of the phone, wondering what I'm doing, why I'm not responding, why I'm not out there doing the victory lap with all the other heptathletes. And so it's just like moments like that, you really need your support system. And so I can't imagine what it would be like for people who haven't had the experience that we've both had. Like that would be heartbreaking for them.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. Okay, so what we kind of touched on, what it feels like. Well, for you guys, do you guys have a lot of fans normally when you compete or not so much?
Only at like really big competitions. But right now we have a ranking system. And I'm not sure if it's similar to your guys's, but it's you have to go to really competitive competitions in order to rank high in the world. And so you don't really play with like the smaller meets anymore. You kind of build your schedule based off of who's in the meets, what they're ranked off of like the IAAF ranking system, which is like the World Athletic Ranking System. And then you pick which competitions you're going to go to based off of those two like factors. So the only meets I go to anymore are overseas, and they're really well known. So usually there are a lot of people, but if I'm just doing open events like here in Canada or in Toronto, then there's like literally no one. It could be like a practice meet. So I'm used to both, I think, which is really good training. So maybe other people aren't, like maybe basketball or like some other sports that like soccer might not be used to that environment.
That makes sense. So then for you, you weren't really affected by the fact that there was no fans.
No, I actually think it was a bit better for me because I was looking, I remember on the last event when I was like on my deathbed, I was like looking out into, because we're doing our introductions and where you kind of run out and they say your name and stuff like that. And I could see the top of the stands from where I was standing before the introduction. And I was like, I can't imagine what this stadium would look like with every seat full. Like how intimidating would that be? First of all, don't even feel well enough to compete right now, and yet I am. But with the full stadium, like of all these people, I think it would just be so overwhelming with all of the other issues that I was experiencing at that time. So I think it was a benefit in my situation, but I think maybe if the schedule is better, maybe the weather was a little bit better, not as hot, then I would be excited to have that many people. And hopefully one day I will, just so I can see what it's like and see if I can handle that type of pressure. Be interesting.
Yeah. So for us, it was completely opposite in Rio because normally our competitions, like our ones, fencing does a pretty poor job of marketing, depending on what country we're in. At our competitions in America, they now even limited who's allowed to come into the venue. Like it's only, you're allowed to have, I don't remember, they started charging, but they also, for COVID reasons, obviously now they have a different policy, but at some point they started charging for like safety purposes. And like, who's really going to pay for fencing? Also, they're not even marketing it. So like we can be in somebody's town and nobody even knows about it, which is ridiculous. Different topic, but so we don't usually have a lot of people in our stadiums, maybe at world championships, but it's still usually just mostly fencers anyway, or like parents, coaches. So I remember walking out at the Olympics, like thankfully, like our psychologists were like, just make sure you're out in the venue, like you're out there seeing things. So you're kind of at least used to these big crowds since you guys don't get to experience them. But like, I remember walking out the day we competed, even still, I already saw the venue. I've already been out there. It felt like somebody was walking around with their hands around my throat. Mm. Like I couldn't breathe. Like I couldn't process it. Like it was just so insane to me. Also, we don't even have cameras when we're competing. So right. We had cameras following us. And I remember being told, so I was an alternate. And then they have weird rules at the Olympics that you can't change people throughout the day. Like when you change permanently and nobody else can go back, which is different for us on other competitions. And so we kind of waited until last minute in case somebody had an injury, because we all had older, like we had older athletes on the team. So they put me out for the bronze medal match. So like, that's already an absurd amount of pressure. I hadn't competed the entire day. So like, that's my first moment. And I remember like, first of all, being told that I would compete, and I like went into panic mode. But again, through like knowing and years of all this, I like talked myself back and I was like, this is just a job. Like you've done this before. The only difference is there's a crowd. Like you've already even fenced this girl you're going to fence. You've beaten her, like nothing to worry about. I'm just going to get out there, do as fast as we can and be done.
Yeah.
And then like, as we're competing in my head, I'm like, maybe we don't really need me. Like, maybe I shouldn't even do this. And then I'm like getting up. My coach is giving me a pep talk and there's a camera like in my face. I'm just kind of like, please leave me alone. This is not the time. And like stepping out there was insane. Like all these people screaming, like I said, cameras everywhere. It was a complete difference for me. So I feel like at least for the fencing aspect, for the fencers, having an empty stadium was probably helpful for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just curious to see people that are used to stadiums full, of how they would feel about it.
Yeah, it's interesting you talking about like the inner dialogue that goes through your head when you're faced with like a challenge that you maybe haven't faced yet. And obviously it worked out well for you. So like when you got started, how did you deal with the pressure and stuff like that? Because obviously like you're saying all these things and you're doubting yourself and that your confidence is like going back and forth. But if you did well in the competition, obviously, like, does it feel different once you get started and you feel the kind of energy from the crowd and you feel everything and then you get into the rhythm? Like, is that what it felt like when you started?
Kind of, yeah. So actually, well, to be honest, I do really well under pressure. And when I'm feeling good on the strip, I don't hear anybody. I don't know what the hell is going on, because I just don't need to. Like I like have laser focused vision or hearing, I guess, in that situation for like my coach and like the referee. And I don't need anything else. There's days where I've competed where it didn't matter who you were putting out in front of me. I was beating them, like tunnel vision, as they call it. But in that situation, I did put myself in that situation where I was like, I just have to score 5 points and I can step off this strip. So I did block out everything and I was doing well. So like the cheering was kind of helping instead of like hurting me. But then we had a moment where my equipment like malfunctioned and they came over to fix it. And I had too much time. I mean, it was probably like a minute. It felt like I was there for 40 minutes with them, like, and me looking around. And that's when the crowd hurt me, because everybody was cheering. And I looked around before, again, I knew the situation. I was like, I'm going to go out fence and step off. But like having that time really threw me off. And I struggled to get back into the rhythm of like shutting it all out. So that sucked. But ultimately, I did it. Thank God. It just took me a little bit.
That's so interesting to hear behind the scenes stuff. And it's similar and a little bit different than what we go through, because ours is so like, it's like an 8-second race and then you get half an hour to warm up for the next one. So we get the time to look around as well. And I wonder if it would be any different if the crowd was full. I think I wouldn't be as open with my emotions, as you said. I think it would kind of train me to be kind of more reserved with how I'm acting as well.
Yeah. So I think, I think that like those factors all help for us to really see the emotion. So that's an interesting factor.
Yeah, for sure.
So you were saying you guys were not allowed to leave leave your rooms in the village?
Yeah. So, well, we were in the village. It was a little bit easier. We did a pre-competition camp and that was way stricter. So it seemed like when we got to the village, we got a little bit more freedom. We weren't allowed to leave the village, but I'm not sure if you ever are in any competitions. But yeah, so we were allowed to, we stayed in our rooms most of the time, went to the dining hall. And I think that was a problem for a lot of people, actually, because you aren't presented with a lot of things to do. And so a lot of countries that didn't have the same access to food like our countries do, their weight fluctuated a lot because they had so much access to the dining hall. And so I think it caused a problem for a lot of athletes with getting more access to food. So they're eating more right before their competitions and it affected their performance. So that's really interesting to me because I've just been trained to eat same foods that I've been eating, to know when to eat, that kind of thing. But maybe some countries don't have the same nutritional education as we do. So that was like an interesting factor as well. And then there was like a couple shops and stuff that we were allowed to visit, but I visited them like 4 times. And it's just like, there's not much else to do. Like I looked around a little bit. You don't want to walk too much. So it was tough to find things to do. If you have like good friends on the team, then it would make it easier. But you also are only allowed to go in 5 days before your event at the most. And then you have to leave within 48 hours after your event is done. So if you don't make the finals, you're on a plane back home, which is really unfortunate. Wow. For some people. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very different. I mean, that makes sense. It sounds a little less strict than what we were told would happen. Mm-hmm. Obviously, rules change, but from what it sounded like was that we were only allowed to see certain people and we had to write down who we had to see throughout the day and that we would get like allotted times to go into the dining hall and that we wouldn't be allowed to be walking around the village. So I'm glad that was changed and that wasn't that way because that would have obviously been insane if you have to just sit in your room until you compete, like allowed to go at this time to the dining hall, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. It was difficult. And like, we all had roommates and stuff too, which was okay. But then my roommates left because they were done their events. So it was just me in the room at the very end. So it was a little bit of a lonely experience just because they're forcing you all to do things at separate times. So you don't really get to bond with your teammates or your competitors like you usually do. So like, obviously I'm still very grateful that I went, and the experience was amazing. The facilities and volunteers were absolutely amazing. The people in Japan are the nicest people that I've ever met. And so it made it hard to be like upset or like in a grumpy mood when you're there, when they're like waving at you and they're like being so nice and like good luck and all this. So they brought a very positive atmosphere to it, even if like things were really restricting. So that was nice.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. I love to hear that. But what did I want to say? For us, obviously, like what definitely sucks is the fact that you weren't able to be meeting people. I mean, I think that was like my favorite part of the Olympics, which is funny because we medaled, like that should be my favorite part. But like, I don't know, just like as an athlete, I feel like you and I like have an unspoken bond because you and I don't have to talk about the sacrifices. Like if we do, you don't even have to explain like what it feels like to have off season and training. And like, we just get all these things because even though we're in different sports, like some things are just still so across the board for us anyway, versus you talk to anybody else and like, you're like, oh, you have to make these sacrifices. And they're like, oh, that sucks. But they don't understand. Like they can never understand of like what we're going through because it's completely different than what everybody else goes through. And I loved that at the Olympics because anybody you spoke to, like I feel like everybody was like, yes, let me collect all these friends. And for the most part, obviously there was like the outliers, but everyone was so nice. Everybody was so down to meet, to like have conversations. And I became friends with people that I would have never expected to ever even meet or like interact with, like Serena Williams, like the gymnast, like the basketball player. So like, that was obviously incredible. And like, that just sucks that that's not what you guys got.
But I think our presence on social media and across like different social media platforms was really big this year. Even if we didn't get to meet like face to face, I remember like scrolling through TikTok during the Olympics and the people were like engaging with the athletes so much. And I think it makes people realize that like from an outside perspective that like us athletes are also humans and that we have big personalities. And that's why when we get to these events that we make friends so easily, because these are people that have gone through the same things. Like you said, they're interesting people. They have really cool personalities. So like, we're also have so many aspects to us outside of just being an athlete. And so I think that's why it's so cool being at these events and meeting people, because yeah, you have this bond, but you also really like who they are. So I think that's why we tend to have more chemistry with people who have gone through the same things as us. And it makes other people realize that like, we are more than just our sport. Like so many people are like, wow, athletes are funny too. I thought you guys just spawned there. It's like, yeah, we actually are pretty funny. Like we don't just race and then train and then sleep and then eat. Like we also have really big personalities and we tend to get along with each other.
Yeah, that's always a funny thing when like somebody, like they meet me and they're like, wow, you're like really like down to earth and like you're funny. I'm like, what did you think? What did you think I'm just like this robot of like, I need to get to the venue. I need to stab people. I am done. I go to sleep. Like that always like made me laugh so much. Like, yeah, I have a personality, obviously.
Just like you, we just tend to take to a sport or an event and dedicate a lot of our lives to it, but it doesn't take away our personality.
Right. Yeah. So that's always a funny thing to talk to other people about.
Yeah.
So then so you left 48 hours after you competed. So you guys didn't really have events to like celebrate medals.
No, like they had the medal ceremonies and they had the closing ceremonies, but my 48 hour window was not during a lot of those times. So it was funny because all these rumors, other people talking about how athletes like hook up with each other and like mingle and like party and all this stuff. And I'm like, did I miss out on something? Like, was there something going on that I didn't realize? Because I went to my event, I recovered, I like went to watch a few other events, slept and went home. Right. I would have loved to celebrate a little bit, but I don't know if other people were or what was going on, but I really doubt that it was the same as previous Olympics. I think they're really trying to contain us just for the safety of their people, which is obviously understandable, but I can't imagine how it would be during another time. Like if it really is true that that kind of stuff happens, but I wanted to tell everyone, like, if this stuff is happening, I guess I'm out of it because I can't see it.
Yeah. So for us, it was, I don't know if it's the same, obviously in other countries, obviously I can only speak about what was happening with Team USA. So for us, it was, if anybody medaled like on our team, we would all go to team, or like we all had an invite to Team USA house. So I, as an alternate, I didn't have an automatic invite. I had to be like invited in. Now as an Olympian that I became one, I can, whatever Olympics happen, I can always go to the Team USA house as an Olympian. But like we were all invited. We all got an email or a text message, I don't remember, that like we're all celebrating so-and-so's accomplishments. We went to the Team USA house. We had like, there was this one room that was like reserved for like the medalists and families and all that. And we all just hung out there. We had drinks, we had food. And then we were allowed to obviously stay at the Team USA house as long as we wanted. I mean, yeah. So that was obviously happening. I didn't party, obviously, before I competed. And even afterwards, I didn't really party. But I was told that there were certain countries that were just partying the entire time.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I went to that one, I think I went to two Team USA celebrations, one for my friend, one for us. And then there was a party that was organized in a favela where they just brought us all out into the ghetto, but there was like this one house that was just like blocked off for us. We went to that party. And then I went to the last night with Team France hosted something. But yeah, I mean, I heard there was like an absurd amount of parties in Rio. Wow. Again, I wasn't part of all of them. We also ran out of condoms in Rio. I was in a relationship. I didn't experience any of that, but I remember like walking by and they had a garbage bag. And I was like, what is that? And my friends were like, oh my God, those are condoms.
I was like, I guess people are being safe.
Yeah. Yes. Very safe and very active. Yeah. And then they had a condom dispenser in the dining hall also, where like the Swedes would always, I think it was the Swedes that would sit by there. And like, anytime somebody came by, they would be cheering. But I'm assuming that was not the case in Japan.
No, it definitely, we didn't even get that. It was very, they didn't want any of that activity going on. I think mostly because of COVID, but also because their culture is not as, we're very different, I think, over here, that's more acceptable. And so I think we kind of just pretended that wasn't going to happen. And everyone else thought that too. And so we didn't promote it in any way. So right. The traditions were not the same as previous Olympics. And so I'm not sure. I mean, obviously I wasn't involved in it, but like maybe it still went down. Maybe I just was, I haven't talked to enough people to see what happened, but in order to make that happen, you would have to put in a lot of effort if you really wanted to. So yeah,
that sounds it. And I mean, the beds were made of cardboard, so that would have also been interesting. Were they even comfortable?
They were very hard. So, I mean, the bed frame was cardboard, but there's a mattress obviously on top. And then you had like a pillow that was practically made out of rock, which is fine. Like it was, it was fine to sleep. Like I got enough sleep. So they weren't probably as bad as people assumed. And there are very famous beds across social media. I was like, these are the beds when I got into the room. I was like, this is it. And so it wasn't the greatest, but apparently they're reusable and sustainable. So I think it was a good call on their part. And I'm sure they were pretty stable. I saw some people balancing on them and testing them out and they seemed fine. So I think that was just a rumor.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you heard of anybody that broke it. I mean, it's made of cardboard.
Yeah, no, I think even the bigger throwers didn't get the cardboard beds. They got like Tempur-Pedic. Oh.
That makes sense.
So they have to be really big during those competitions because they also have bed extenders for the really tall people. So I don't think these beds were specifically made for people who are really big or really tall. So they had to make some accommodations.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. Speaking of which, let's go back to the food. Because from my experience, the food in Rio at the dining hall was not good. And then I went to, did you go to the Pan American Games in Lima, Peru in 2019?
I got announced to the team, but I was struggling with an injury, so I decided to pull out.
Got it. So the food there also wasn't great. How was the food in Tokyo, in the village?
It was actually really good. It was not good at our pre-camp, but when I got into the village, you had access to like so many different options. So I think that was the thing. Even if the food wasn't that good, or some of it, you had the freedom to choose. So if you didn't like it, it's kind of like on you. So like if you didn't like that one, you can choose something different the next day. So I think the benefit was really to have so many different options. There is like chicken, there's all like type of carbs you could want, pasta, there's pizza, and then there's like the authentic food, like the Asian food, if you wanted to try that. So I tried that a little bit after, but I had no complaints in the village. Like I wish I had more time to try out some of the different foods because they had so much, and I didn't have enough time after my competition to try like all the sketchy stuff that I didn't want to beforehand.
Right. It's interesting. Yeah. For us, I mean, we had a different variety also, but it just one, I mean, they were completely, I mean, in Japan, obviously they're a lot stricter with the way that they do things and they follow protocols to a T. In Brazil, different culture, Everything's more free flowing, whatever. But like, we didn't even have labels on the food for a long time. Like even people for like allergy reasons, we didn't even know like what was in the food. And then it was like either too salty or too spicy. I mean, I told this story on like another episode, but I was eating pad thai and I took a bite and I ended up biting into a pepper and my like tears started flowing down my face. And I remember I locked eyes with my teammate and she's like, what? And I was like, I bit into a pepper. And like everybody got up from the table and like brought over like their remedies of like, somebody brought me milk, somebody brought me ice cream, somebody brought me water. And then like, I just remember I was like, I'm not eating here anymore. So before I competed, obviously I didn't eat breakfast there because breakfast always left me feeling nauseous. But as soon as I finished competing, like a healthy athlete, I would go in the morning and get McDonald's for the entire day. And I would eat McDonald's throughout the day.
That's perfect. That's my guilty pleasure as well after competition. I don't know why. It's like, I think because I never ever get to eat it during the season. And so I like, when I'm off, I just crave McDonald's, which is probably so bad. There must be something in it that's addictive because
laced with cocaine, for sure.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Dangerous.
Yeah. I think it's the salt. I think it's the fact that we know it's not good for us. I honestly can't eat it in America. It makes me completely nauseous. So yes. And I feel a difference. Like when I'm in Europe, I will always go get a cheeseburger. It tastes different. And I mean, I was fine in Brazil. I didn't feel sick. I mean, I definitely gained weight after I competed, obviously, because I wasn't training nonstop and I was eating McDonald's. But yeah, no, I mean, that was pretty much the only thing that I could eat. Otherwise I was getting sick. So it made sense.
That's so funny.
So you didn't really get to meet anybody, like any of the athletes that you really always wanted to meet?
No, I didn't. And like, I was kind of watching their events on, I did meet track people, but I kind of already knew of them already. And so I wanted to meet people from other sports. I was like really determined to do that. And so I was kind of following their events and stuff and I was on social media, like watching when they were competing, and then they would finish. And then I'm like, are they leaving in 48 hours? I'm not even in the village yet. So I didn't get to meet so many people from other sports that I really wanted to. Plus athletics is so late in the schedule. So there wasn't a lot of sports still in the village when we were competing. And so I wish I would have met more Canadian athletes from different sports. I didn't even see half of them. So some of them I reached out to on social media and I was like, oh, how'd your event go and stuff like that. And now we're like connected through that. But it kind of sucks to not be able to actually like sit down with some people and talk to them and create friendships there. I didn't get the same opportunity, I think, as you did to create friendships at the event. So
yeah. And you guys couldn't go to other events to watch, right?
No. And I think a couple of people like tried to sneak into the diving and stuff like that, but it sounded like a very strategic plan and I don't think I would be up for organizing something like that. And so it wasn't simple to get into other events. That's all. I mean, all the buses were lined up and said that no one from other events, so they would check your accreditation to see if you were actually in that event. So as long if you could get someone else's accreditation for the day from a different event, maybe you could go, but it seemed really tough to get in. But they did let people from the same sport watch the event. So I got to watch a lot of the track events and see some world records go down. So that was enough for me.
There you go. That's awesome. So, well, I mean, that's cool. Like that track is just so big and so many different events. Like for us, we don't have that much nearly. So did you guys get pins? Did you guys trade pins? How did that work?
Yeah. I mean, the US team was there way earlier than us because they came just straight from the US into the village. So they got more than 5 days and they were really adamant about trading pins. So they were all over it. I'm kind of like a shy person. So I wouldn't just go up to somebody and ask trade pins. But if people asked me, then I would. So I didn't trade as many as like some people who made it their mission. But people who wanted to trade with me, I would trade with them and stuff like that. But it's such a big thing there. Like pin trading is like a sport in itself. So some people who were really into it, they were like so proud of it. They had them all on their lanyard and you're like, I don't even have any pins left. They're trying to get pins from other USA people so they could trade those with other countries. So it just seemed like too much of a chore for me to do while I was trying to focus. But it was really cool to trade with some of the other the countries that asked me and to witness it go down.
It's always so funny explaining to people about it because people don't know. And it just like, it seems like such an absurd thing. I like tell them like, yeah, we trade pins at the Olympics. They're like,
just trade pins. Like we are obsessed with trading pins.
And you like, I remember like they handed us a bag of it, like at team processing. And I was like, why do I have like, I don't know, like 50 pins for what? What am I giving this to my family afterwards? And like, I went through team processing with my friend who also was a first time Olympian, but then we got there and I kind of started seeing people doing it. And I was like, oh, like, okay, whatever. And then I ended up getting into it myself. And whenever we left the village again, I had a different experience. Like we would leave the village and there's just people waiting outside of like, I have like a Sochi pin because he's like, can I trade with you for like for Rio, whatever. So I have different Olympics, but yeah, it's always just so funny to see like Serena Williams, like was taking a photo with me and then she like ran off to trade pins with somebody. I was like, this is so weird to see.
I need to trade pins.
No, literally. She's like, we took a photo and she's like, oh my God, wait. And she like chased some girl from like, I don't know, Venezuela or something. Like, I need your pin. Like, do you have a pin? I need to trade pins. And again, it's just like such an interesting concept to see. And I mean, we have the same thing happen at the Peru Pan American Championships of the same thing. And I mean, I think it's a cool concept because it does like in situations like you were saying, you're shy. Like I'm also not really somebody to like run out to like meet strangers. And I definitely wasn't doing that in the beginning of Rio. I think I started to more so later down the road because I was like, well, now I kind of want pins. And if I don't approach people, I won't get pins. And I learned too at that point, like there's so many pins in the US that a lot of people already had them. So I was like, no, I learned my lesson. And then I started in Peru. I was like approaching everybody to trade pins. So, I mean, I think it's cool. It helps like start conversations and meeting from different countries. So whoever came up with this concept, even though it sounds insane to strangers, I mean, I think they're a genius.
Yeah, I think so. It's a really cool way to connect with other countries. I think I need to next time be prepared, like bring a pin bag with all my pins in it and then have a place to put other countries' pins and have them organized. Maybe I need like a pin book or something and labels. So maybe I'll start planning now for Paris 2024. Not even making it, just about the pins.
You only have 3 years. There's less time to prepare.
Oh gosh, I get on it right after this.
You're already starting late. I mean, I think, well, you're supposed to put them on your lanyard to show off. So I would say you need a backup lanyard in case you run out of room, and then you can have a fanny pack of your pins. So they're just always on you. Cause I remember like would leave the room and like someone from a cool country would approach me, or like I would see them like, no, I don't have my pins. I literally just ran out to like get my laundry or like to grab a snack. So that's always a funny thing of, or like cover your jacket in all your extra pins.
I need a forward backpack or something, like one I could wear on board and then have it. Yeah, I need some way to display them because you have to put them on display. That's what people do. They'll have them all on their lanyards. Like, look at me. I'm just like,
wow. I'm trading. I'm a trader. You got it. Like, we're trading.
Yeah. It legit is a game. It's so funny to see in real time.
That's so funny. Okay. So what would you say would be your favorite part of these Olympics? Again, very different than normal, but what would you say was your favorite thing and your least favorite thing?
I would say my favorite thing was when I was out there on the track and I might have told you this already, but I was high jumping and I was doing well in the high jump, and the women's 400 meter hurdles was going on. And I was like, oh, this is like a really cool event. I can't believe I get to watch this like on the track beside them. And like a world record went down that event. And I was just like, so in awe of actually being able to watch it as I was competing. So I was in the exact, I had to tell myself, I'm in the same event as these girls, like world record holders. Like I deserve to be here. I'm jumping really well. Like they also get to view me doing my thing. And I remember watching them with their flags after like walking around the track and stuff like that. And I'd only watched them on TV really before. And so I was like major fangirl. I almost missed my attempt because I was like literally staring at them while doing their victory lap. And then I had to like snap back to reality and be like, you don't need, like you're here too. Like these girls, yeah, obviously they're really good and stuff, but like, look where you are. And then I looked around and you see Tokyo 2020 plastered everywhere. I think that's really the moment when I realized like I'm at the Olympics right now and I'm competing on the same stage as these girls that I'm like obsessed over right now. And so that was a really cool moment for me. And I think I'll probably remember that forever. And then the worst part was probably when I got really sick the next day.
Yeah.
The heat in Tokyo is no joke in the summer. And people had warned me, like people from Tokyo were like super humid. Like, please be careful, like drink water. Even the announcer in the warm up area would come over the loudspeaker and say 36 degrees or I don't know what it is in Fahrenheit, but 36 degrees Celsius today, like 90% humidity. Let's survive together. And it's like, wow, thank you. Like that, drink water. Let's survive this together. And I was like, I'm not sure if that's the right thing to say in this situation, but obviously
wording.
Yeah. And so I think I've never faced a more conflicting situation before the last event. I was so sick and like would just like, I'd be throwing up so much and dizzy and off balance and all this stuff. Their doctors were telling me not to run, but I don't think I could call myself a true like Olympian if I didn't finish my event. And so even though I knew that I wasn't going to rank or place where I wanted to place, that was like out of the question at that point. It was more just about trying to get on the line and see if I could get the job done. And so I think that was like the most pressure and the most overwhelmed I've ever felt in the competition, whether or not my body could like truly do it. And so I think that's the most challenging situation I've ever been in. And I hope to never be in that situation again. I want to be healthy and prepared and ready when I step on the line next time. So I'm glad that decision is done with and I got it done. And next time I'll be way more prepared for the conditions. Yeah. There's no care.
Yeah. Obviously I wasn't there to compete at whatever, but, and I've never been there in the summer. Maybe, but it wasn't. No, we were there in like.
Are you guys inside when you compete?
Yeah, we're inside, but we've been to Japan for a training camp before World Championships, and World Championships were in July. I don't remember it being absurdly hot.
Yeah, I think a record breaking summer. Like they were saying that's not usually like this, but there's something like quite dangerous about the conditions this summer. So
it sounds
yeah.
It.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's always good to have those kinds of challenges. I mean, while they suck at the time, but I mean, it makes you stronger because you know you went through it and you're more prepared in the future. So I mean, these Olympics were tough as it was, but I don't think you're going to have that same experience in Paris. And hopefully in general, Paris will just be back to, normal, where everybody can interact and hang out and go to events. Because, I mean, it's cool that you got to see while you were competing, like to watch people, which sucks that it was only while you were competing. But I remember like going to swimming. I didn't get to go to that many events because it was difficult to get tickets to like the fun events. My best friend was there, so she kind of organized a few of them. But going to swimming, to me, was insane. Like you watch these people. And I mean, I don't know, to me, I had like the entire time I had like this imposter syndrome of like, I don't know how I'm here amongst like all these Olympians that I've been watching on TV. Like it still to me doesn't process that like we're on the same level, because how can I be on the same level as Michael Phelps?
Yeah.
That's not a thing. Like we're different. And like watching him compete and watching like world records being set in swimming, like was just insane. And that's like, I couldn't process that. Like I said, I still, to this point, I'm like, I don't like Michael Phelps is up here and I'm down here. There's no way we align. But yeah, no, that was my favorite part. I'm like seeing weightlifting. Like, I don't know. I don't really watch it on TV, but like I got tickets to it. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And like, that was incredible to see people throw up like 500 pounds like this. Okay.
They're also just like, they're also probably in awe of what you do. And I think that's what's so cool is that you learn so much about all these different sports and you become huge fans of the sports through that experience.
Yeah.
I watched all these events on TV that I would never have watched otherwise, like sailing. And I was like, I'm so interested in this sport now. And so you become fans of sports that you didn't think that you would become fans of. And you're like in awe of what they do. And I think in our position, we can really appreciate it even to like a higher extent because we know what it's like to put ourselves through that and get to this level. So like what you're thinking about them, they're probably thinking the same thing about you, which is also really cool.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, again, I have imposter syndrome, so I don't believe that stuff at all, but I mean, quite possibly. And yeah, and I think we do appreciate sports a lot differently than other people, because again, we watch these Olympians compete and we're like, yeah, like we already have this like unspoken conversation we don't have to have. Like you went through a whole lot of shit to get here. You made it, like amazing. Like now I get to watch you doing this thing that you're just beyond exceptional at. So that's always a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's so cool. Where's your bronze medal?
It's on my desk in my little box thing that we got in Rio.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, did you frame it or put it anywhere? I wonder what people do with that.
So I always ask this question whenever I have somebody that's a medalist, because I've heard so many interesting things about it. Of like, so I heard a cool thing afterwards. We had this like Team USA convention thing of like how to deal post Olympics. And then we had like our red carpet event, which I'm assuming they're not going to have this year. And like we met the president. So again, I'm curious how that whole thing's going to happen. But so they told us there that for an actual Olympian, the medal doesn't really matter itself. It's the fact that you made this accomplishment. 9 times out of 10, athletes don't even know where their medals are. They don't really frame it and put it up, because like for us, it's like, cool, I did it. Amazing. Like I finished third in the world in this event. Next accomplishment. But for people, like when people meet me, and like I say an Olympic medalist, they're like, well, where's your medal? Why do you care about the medal? I did it. Why does the medal matter to you? Like there's bronze medals for like, I mean, a lot of other events, but like I won the medal. But like, that's always a question. I'm not upset about it anymore. I get it. I understand. Like for them, it's like the actual like, oh my God, you won this like chunk of metal. And that's what everyone said. Like these medals are for your family. They're for your friends. It's for them to hold the weight and feel what it's like to win, when meanwhile you actually understand it because you did it. So yeah, I talked to Dwayne Wade about it at an event. I think if I remember correctly, he has 2 gold medals. One, he said they're both in a safe, but that the strap ripped off the one. And I was like, oh, you can like send it in and they'll fix it, because that's what they did at our Rio medals. And he was like, yeah, like, I don't know. I really never got around to it. Somebody else, I was talking to him. He was moving and he's like, I have no idea. He's like, it's in some box somewhere. But there was a point, it was funny. I went to a speaking event and I ended up going to like the grocery store afterwards. So I put the medal underneath my car, on my seat in my car, so nobody stole it. And I completely forgot about it. And I had at the time a boyfriend visiting me, and he like reached underneath my seat, or like it, like I stopped and like the medal like slid forward. And he's like, is this your Olympic medal? And I was like, oh shit, that's where it is. And I was like, I completely forgot about it. And he like could not understand that. He like told everybody this story whenever we were together. And he's like, yeah, this psychopath is just bringing like her Olympic medal is underneath her car seat. And I was like, yeah, but like, I don't know. For me, again, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the accomplishment. So at least now it's just on my desk in the box that we got.
That's good. I think you're right about that. I don't think people like cherish this material item. I think it's more the accomplishment that they did. And even like, I remember being at the airport after and I was with a decathlete who had come fourth, and everyone who asked us how we did, he was like, I came fourth. And they were like, oh, like, good job. But because he didn't get a medal, they didn't look at him the same way. And I wanted to scream at them. I wanted to be like, fourth. He came fourth in the world. Like, do you not understand that that placing is like such an accomplishment? But I think people only see 1, 2, 3 is the really important ones. And it's just like, he was that close from a medal. It's not really about the medal at this point. It's only 3 people are ahead of him in the entire world. And so I think people really get their mind wrapped around this like material item with a medal. And it's like, the fourth place is just one out of it. Like, what's the difference between either second and third and fourth? Same thing. And so I think it's tough because we value the placing and other people see it as like, did you win? You know?
Yeah. It's very different. Also, you talk to Olympians, like, I don't know. I don't think you and I are any different, even though like I have a medal, you don't. I don't think, like, for me, you're an Olympian. I think you're one of the best in the world. Same thing like Lolo Jones. Not a medalist, but still an amazing athlete. She's a summer winter Olympian. But I mean, even on social media, whenever I say anything, my video blew up and people were commenting. They're like, I don't know why you're speaking. You're only a bronze medalist. And I was like,
only a bronze.
What's awesome about this is my peers that are also like medalists or non-medalists, whatever, Olympians, like not a single one of us will be like, oh, Georgia, I'm better than her. I have a medal. No, like, again, I understand of like, it's like little minute details of versus medal and not medal. Sometimes like split seconds, sometimes like, I mean, let's be honest. We all understand there's cheating involved in sports and especially at the Olympics. Like sometimes that's a factor, but like, I don't know. I never understood that. Like, how can that be like, oh, like you're only an Olympian. Like you didn't even medal. Yeah. Do you understand how few people in the world are Olympians and how much it takes to become one? And it's always the people that like never tried in a sport, because if you're an athlete at any point in time, you understand. I mean, like when I've even explained it at like, I don't know, going out to events with my friends and they're like, okay, well, like, can you like walk me through like what you had to do to like the best of your ability to become Olympian? I'm like, well, this. And they're just sitting there like, you must be slightly insane. And I agree. I think there's a level of crazy in all of us, because I don't think anybody in their right mind would have the dedication, the sacrifice, the like constant motivation, like to do that. Because I mean, like, for me, like I can't do anything because we have practices on the weekends. Like my friend would be out at concerts and like, I'd be overseas and like, okay, it was like 6-hour difference. So she'd be calling me, like FaceTiming me. And so like, I couldn't be at concerts. I mean, for birthdays, I had to cancel like surprises because I'm like, I know I have to go to practice. And people are like, you know, like I'd go hang out with my friends. I'm not going to just miss out on my friends. Like I have no friends from high school because fencing was my obsession. That's all I was doing. I was training, competing nonstop while everybody else was out partying. So like, I mean, I had my party experience my freshman year of college, which I didn't even know like how to process because I was never able to be doing all of that.
I think it's crazy. I've seen videos of people who are saying like, oh, I wish I didn't party when I was young. Maybe I'd be at the Olympics. And it's like, it's also not that simple. Like there are people who work just as hard as you and me and are unlucky that year, or they even work harder than us or made more sacrifices in their life and they didn't make it. So I think it's like important to recognize that like being at the Olympics, yeah, we worked hard, but there's so many people who missed out on it who worked just as hard. Being an Olympian is like something obviously to cherish forever. And yep. It's just like, even if you make those sacrifices, it might not go your way. And that's how much work can affect you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, like I said, like a little like milliseconds can cost you that, whether you're Olympian or not. Or like in my case, like this year, they canceled our last qualifier. So I didn't even get a chance to qualify. And it's like, I mean, that one sucked. It's like, I don't know. I feel like I would feel better knowing that I had the chance and failed versus not even getting that opportunity. Cause it's like the entire time it's like, well, what if I had that moment? What, like, would I have been there? And that was like the hardest for me watching it. It's like, well, this sucks. Like I didn't even get to like try to make this.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think that's an important thing.
So many other factors. And I just wanted to like comment on these videos when people were like, oh, if I didn't party when I was young, I could be at the Olympics. It's like, it actually isn't that simple. Like you also have to make all the right calls. You have to compete when it's necessary. You have to like all these other things. And so it would be interesting to see like someone go through the same steps as us or someone else and see how difficult it really is. Cause it's easy to say that you want to do it, but doing it is like a whole different ballpark.
Yeah. And it's like also learning from your mistakes, learning from your failures. Like at a competition, you don't do well. Like you now have to learn from that. You can't just be like, oh, I lost. You have to learn from it. And then you have to make the correct changes to improve, like whether it's your mentally, emotionally, physically, like there's so many factors. And I mean, there's also like different life events. Like if your family member passes away it's never a great moment, but like, right, like at this, I don't know, right before Olympic qualifiers, you're not going to be in the right headspace. Mm-hmm. So that's also a factor. Like there's just so many different things involved in it. And obviously, I don't know, that's kind of been my point of like wanting to speak to Olympians and athletes and just people that aren't like your everyday people, because I don't know, we make everyone out to be these crazy celebrities or like robots. And like, I don't know, I've had the amazing experience of like meeting, I don't know, like people that are on TV and athletes and all that stuff. And I mean, they're usually normal people. And like, I don't know, I myself have been like shocked meeting, I don't know, like Jimmy Kimmel, Dave Chappelle, whatever. And I'm like, no, you're like a guy's guy. Like you're my friend. Like Jimmy Kimmel's introducing me to like John Hamm and people at like his party. And I'm like, what? You're literally a normal person. And we watch you and we think you're like, you're this God. And like, yes, I'm like, again, doing amazing things. And yes, you're famous, but like, you're just a normal person like me. There's no difference.
No, that's true. I think that's why athletes and sometimes other celebrities connect, because there's a passion there that we both have and like a love for what we do to be successful, for sure.
That's all the questions that I have. If there is anything else that you think was worth bringing up from Tokyo or in general, if you want to let people know how.
Anyone who obviously is trying to make it, I think talk to other people who have been through it, because you can gain a lot of experience from talking to people. And I wish I had a little bit more, because I think I went in a little bit blind, and it's shocking how different this experience is than to all the other meets in your past. Like you kind of touched on it too. But yeah, anyone who's like shooting for the next Olympics, gain as much knowledge or anything like that as you can to make sure that you don't go in as much of a rookie as you actually are, because experience goes a long, long way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think in general, anything that like you're going for, if you can talk to somebody that's already done it, like reach out. From my experience, usually people are open to talking about it, or if like not that person, somebody else. And just to know like their experience, they might have something that like as a tip for you. And it's still just like going into it not blindly definitely helps. I mean, I had everybody tell me, I mean, like I fenced in a team event, so like everybody was already telling me how much pressure it is, and I was like, okay, I get it, but like I don't get it, how it can be more. And they're like, I'm telling you, it is the most pressure you're ever going to feel in your entire life. And I was just kind of like, still like, I get it, but I don't get it. And I felt it and I was like, oh, so I think that made it helpful for me, instead of being like, what is this feeling? It was like, okay, yeah. This is what they were talking about. I'm not shocked. I am shocked. I had my rib popped out, because that's how tense I was. So when I was competing, we couldn't get it back in. I couldn't tilt my head all the way.
Oh my goodness.
It's funnier. Like that's how much stress I felt. And again, like, thank God somebody was telling me, like the psychologists were like, go into the venue, spend as much time in there as you can, like hearing like the echoes, or like, just, I don't know, like sit there, take 5 minutes every time you're there, like envision yourself out on a strip. So when you walk out there, you are not going to be suffocated by that. So I think that was a huge game changer. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't even remember that was something that I did. And I think just in general, and any experience, new experience people are going into, I think it's important to talk to somebody that's been through it. And we live in a world now where, I mean, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago, we didn't have social media like this, where you had direct access to anybody that's out there doing it. Like, okay, I mean, you know, just because someone comments on your photo doesn't necessarily mean you're going to answer, because you have so many of them. But like, I don't know, if I was in your sport and I was younger, like I'd be commenting like all the time, like, George, I have a question for you. Like, I'm trying to become an Olympian. Like, please answer me, sending DMs, emails. Like, what is it going to hurt? You might see it, somebody else might see it. And you might, again, give them that like advice of like, you know, like what's your biggest advice that you would give to somebody trying to make it in your sport? And you have something to tell them, because you've had this experience.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm very like open to accepting those kind of questions. Like, I won't respond to the creepy guys, but I'll respond to somebody when he needs advice about the Olympics. So
yeah, I always say the same thing of like, if you guys have any questions, you have my email. Like, I mean, I will happily talk to any athlete trying to make it in whatever sport, because I think it's cool. And I mean, again, I wish like I kind of had that experience when I was younger. Like I got it at a decent age. I think I was freshman in college or senior in high school when I got to like speak to my idols. I don't know. I remember it was my like first World Cup and a girl that had bronze. I think she had bronze. I should know this better, but from 2004, she definitely had a medal and she was coaching me against this other girl. And I remember like, it kind of was like one of those things that like an outer body experience, like I didn't process. And later I was like, I just really had an Olympic medalist standing in my corner, helping me try to beat this other girl that's a world champion. What kind of space am I in right now?
Legit.
Wild. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Fencing's a little bit of a smaller sport. So we get to have that experience a lot quicker than say like maybe most gymnasts or swimmers or stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's a big one. That's a good advice and a good takeaway.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. Cool. Well, that's all I have for you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, which now is not that busy. So maybe it's good entertainment for you.
Thanks. Okay. We'll talk soon. Thanks for having me.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.